When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
Welcome to the Viking Age Podcast. It's the official podcast of thevikingage.com. My name is Chris Shad. I'm a writer for the Viking Age, as well as Zone Coverage, Bring Me the News, and the Brookings Register. My co-host normally is Adam Patrick, but we do this every Monday with a late week episode right here on the Viking Age YouTube channel. We are in podcast form on Apple and Spotify the very next day. But however you consume us, make sure you rate, comment, like, and subscribe so you never miss a new episode and we can spread the word to the masses. Now, today's guest is not Adam Patrick. I had a Ron Burgundy moment there, but he is one of the leading beat writers in the Vikings market. He is an author of two books, including, which I have right here, if I can put it right side up, Football is a Numbers Game, The Story of Pro Football Focus. Get that wherever books are sold, and is the host of the Purple Insider podcast and founder of the website by the same name. His name is Matthew Collar. Matthew, how's your summer going, man?
It's going good. Well, thanks for getting the book. I really appreciate that. I hope you enjoy it. I've heard from a lot of people that have bought it that didn't know much about the analytics movement in football and where PFF fits in. So if you're interested in such topics, then feel free to pick yourself up a copy. But as far as my summer goes, I've tried to do some strange stories and play golf. Those have been my two things. So I just put a golf net in the backyard. I got one of those mats that you hit off of that will not improve my game, I'm sure, but I'll have fun in the backyard. And then I just did a story that I put out about the meme from How I Met Your Mother that everybody uses when the Vikings screw up. And I interviewed the writer, and I've been doing a lot of that, trying to just take a step back from who's wide receiver three and think about some other ideas for stories and stuff. That's kind of what I do in the summertime, and do silly podcasts about random questions where people ask me to build a whole team of fullbacks and things like that. So it's a good time. It's always the calm before the storm, though. We're only a couple weeks away here from all hell breaking.
You buried the lead here. If there was a fullback draft and you had to build an entire team, who would be your number one pick?
The number one pick is probably the only guy I can think of, although maybe there was, I'm sure there were other ones, that was a quarterback and then turned fullback, Michael Robinson. He was okay. A quarterback, I think at Penn State, maybe. And then he became a longtime fullback for the Seattle Seahawks. And sometimes he's on TV these days. But there are very few, if you're making a team of 11, who actually could play quarterback. So you need to start there. And then after that, you have, and obviously this is a historic, you know, fullbacks. There's not 11 fullbacks in the league right now. But building the offensive line was interesting because you got to look for some really hefty fellas. And then you also have to decide who's actually playing fullback. And I decided that Lorenzo Neal was the most fullbacky fullback of all time, and he deserved the fullback spot. But on the skill areas, I actually did pretty well. I put Klein Saucer at tight end slash fullback, Larry Centers on the outside with Kyle Juszczyk, two guys very capable of running routes. Could also use maybe a Kimball Anders back there. Put John Ritchie, Sam Gash on the front line, using the real beefy guys. And Mike Alstott is the running back because he actually did play running back after work done left in Tampa Bay. So that was the most of the lineup that I can remember.
You could not also, bad. Yeah, very, very creative. You could also kind of fudge it a little bit, I think, because Randall McDaniel, he used to be in a fullback package in Minnesota, and there's that legendary clip of him destroying Mike Singletary on Monday Night Football. And then I don't know if Refrigerator Perry was a fullback, but you know, I think he was more like a running back in that situation, but you could use him. I believe Haloti or Vita Vea in Tampa Bay, right? They use him at fullback sometimes, I believe. So, I mean, you can really go deep into the weeds. You know, while we're constructing fullback rosters and mythical fullback teams, Kevin O'Connell and the Vikings have had a very eventful summer as well, because there's been a lot that's happened since we last talked. You know, obviously Kirk Cousins is gone. They have the draft. They have their franchise quarterback. And in our last episode, we rewatched the 2019 Vikings Saints playoff game where Kyle Rudolph pushed off, Mike Zimmer stayed, Kirk Cousins got paid and all that stuff. And the conclusion that I came in is that this year, I feel like we are finally entering the Kevin O'Connell era. You know, do you think that's the case? Or in the first 2 years, you know, it really felt like it was more about Kirk Cousins than Kevin O'Connell, but it feels like a lot has changed. And now this feels like his team in my mind.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, we can't erase what we know of from the last 2 years. And Kevin O'Connell deserves credit for the 13-win season. During the 13-win season, all of us, I'm sure you and myself and the outside world, we all looked at the point differential. We all looked at the stats and said, you know, not really a 13-win team in reality, because they weren't of that strength. But they did win 13, and they did host the playoff game, and they did win the division, and all those things happened. And it matters that that happened, because no one who was playing for the team then that still plays for the team now says, well, you know, it was kind of bogus because of the point differential. No, they were coached by a guy who came in and changed the culture entirely, which is something that is over talked about in football, but totally necessary at that point, from a brutally toxic situation in 2021 to a total vibe change in 2022. The players over the last 2 years have voted Kevin O'Connell as the most likable coach to play for in the NFL by the NFLPA, and their NFLPA anonymous poll numbers are incredibly good. I think number one 2 years ago, number two this last year. Does that happen with Mike Zimmer in charge? Probably not. I would say they would have quite different reviews when it came to the coaching, and the trust started to be built in that 2022 season, and then the way that they fought back from the struggling start the previous year. So all of that foundation of washing out the bad feelings of where they ended with Mike and Rick, and bringing in a new way of doing things, a more modern way of doing things, I think, a more player empowering way of doing things, that matters in so many ways, including I heard from an agent recently that said we wanted to take less money to be in Minnesota rather than go to other places, because we know what Kevin O'Connell brings. We know what the facilities are, the way that players are treated there. Like, those things matter as far as keeping players, as far as attracting free agents in the future. So we can't just say that it didn't really mean much or that it hadn't started yet, when so many ways of daily operation, even a player brought up this to me last year, that having a say, the players with the head coach, about scheduling is a big deal to players. We don't care about that at all, but players feel like they can talk to the coach. They feel like that he listens to the leadership and things like that. Now, does that mean they win a championship? No, you don't get any rings for that, but if there are two offers on the table next year as they try to spend all of this cap space that they have from Kirk Cousins' money, and one is in Arizona that grades the worst, and one is in Minnesota and they grade the best, well, you might be getting that player because people know that you want to be here. Also, it has to be mentioned, Brian Flores is here, wants to stay here. Keenan McCardle is here. They have built a good coaching staff. Josh McCown wants to come work here. Look at the coaching staff under Mike Zimmer. They put Andre Patterson at a position that he wasn't ready for. They had Clint Kubiak at a position at offensive coordinator that he wasn't ready for at that time. I mean, there's a big difference there that matters in those first couple of years. But who I think's team it is now officially, really, is Kwesi Adofo-Mensah, because he was the one tasked with kind of competing at the beginning, bring back Patrick Peterson, get Za'Darius Smith, that kind of thing, and then going through this competitive rebuild transition with the roster. And once you draft your own quarterback as a general manager, now it's your team. So I look at much more of Kwesi Adofo-Mensah was managing the 2021 team into 2022. Basically the same squad. then trying to fix the salary cap for the future from 2022 to 2023 in this awkward transition phase. And then now it becomes, this is your team. This is the start of his timeline. That's kind of the way I would look.
And I've been guilty of kind of ripping his whole competitive rebuild approach through the first 2 years. But I think Kwesi has done this appropriately. Like, you go back to 2021, you mentioned it a little bit. It was toxic. Like, Patrick Peterson signed here, yeah, but he had to do it for, like, what was it, $10 million, $9 million? Like, they were paying him an exorbitant salary. You had other guys like Sheldon Richardson coming back. Bashaud Breeland had that one-year, $2 million deal. Like, you know, a lot of people thought, all right, they fixed the defense. This is the greatest offseason ever. And they go out and, well, they're a 7-9 team or 7-10 or whatever it is now. Like, the past 2 years, Kevin O'Connell coming in, changing those vibes. You get to the playoffs. Last year, even when Kirk Cousins shredded his Achilles, like, could you imagine Kirk popping his Achilles on that 2021 team? They all would have abandoned ship. They abandoned ship anyway halfway through the year. Like, now this feels like a team. You have Kwesi going down, you know, after Kirk goes in. And I mean, I can see it has a negative, but it's also a positive. Like, what do you guys want to do? Do you want to go for it? Obviously, they're going to say yes, but I mean, I don't think those things happen with the old regime. And in today's NFL, like, it matters. It matters if you have a coaching staff that's willing to collaborate. That's the buzzword, right? In Kwesi Adolphus Mensah's tenure, he collaborates with guys. Now, you know, he's turning a corner. We're 2 years down. A lot of veterans are gone. And he's putting his pieces together. Like, with Kwesi, how important do you feel 2024 is in that process to have another winning season, build that culture? Or, you know, is this a season where, you know, I kind of heard you use this term before. Is this a season with vibes? Like, hey, if we win 10 games, that's awesome. If we win 7 games, we get a high draft pick. Like, what's the vibe heading into this season?
So I think you could look at it two different ways. I mean, in one way, they understand that this is not necessarily a team that is ready to compete for a championship. And Kwesi has mentioned 2 year type of window. And you could look at it as a bridge year almost. We talk about bridge quarterbacks, but almost a bridge year. You are taking that bridge over to when you have all that cap space and you can spend it. And by the way, your rookie quarterback is going into year two. So he's had that year to develop. You never see rookie quarterbacks going deep in the playoffs for a reason. It's really, really hard to do in your first year. So, okay, you're going to play Sam Darnold. That means that the expectations have to be tempered from the outset because you don't have a proven quarterback in the same way that you do Kirk Cousins. And you could call it a finding out year. And last year was a finding out year in a lot of ways as well. We found out that Josh Metellus is really good at football. I didn't know that. You didn't know that. And then we found out. And the same thing with Ivan Pace, where we probably did this podcast a year ago. And I went, yeah, it's kind of interesting. But I mean, I don't know. He's a UDFA. I've never seen a UDFA become a starter and then be great. And then, well, now I have, because Ivan Pace Jr. did it. But at this time, we didn't know that. And so there will be opportunities at the wide receiver position. Ty Chandler is another guy. Blake Brandel is another guy. You could go through the roster. Find out how good Dallas Turner is right away. Find out with this cornerback situation. Can Mekhi Blackman play or not? Is there something there with Shaq Griffin, who's not that old, for the future that they could re-sign him? Are you going to extend Byron Murphy Jr. for a long-term period? There's a lot of things that we can get answers to throughout this season, but you also can't say, well, you know, it is just vibes, because you just paid Justin Jefferson a lot of money out of your pocket. And if you are the Wilfs, you're not thinking, I just wrote that check for his signing bonus just to have this year be whatever. The Wilfs have made it clear. I think it's sometimes frustrating through the years of not wanting to take a step back. Also respectable in the same way, because they really care about the record. They want to be in the playoffs. They want the team to win all the time. And I've said before, if the biggest fault of your ownership is that they want to win all the time, then you have a pretty good ownership in the NFL. You're not knocking people's hats off or throwing drinks on fans like in Carolina or something like that. You have an ownership that invests a lot into this and expects results in return. So for Kevin O'Connell, it matters. And I wrote an article about this a lot too toward his extension. Because after this year, if the reporting is correct and he signed a 4-year contract when he took the job, then after this season is the time to negotiate a new deal. If you take a Sam Darnold team and you go 10-7 and make the playoffs, like a Mike Tomlin type of overachieving year where the coaching gets you there into the playoffs, but you're not quite good enough. Well, we're talking about give him a 5-year extension for whatever he wants at that point, because it will have been three to four games over what was expectation from the Vegas odds. But if you live up to the Vegas odds and you win six, then we're still in I don't know mode on the head coach. If he can only win six, I know it's not a great quarterback situation, but you're supposed to be the quarterback guy. And how long are we talking, a 2-year extension at that point? Are we talking feeling more year to year? Let's see what happens with JJ McCarthy. So I think all of us, we can logically look at it and go, well, yeah, I mean, six wins, that's okay, because it's really 2025 where they're supposed to take off with this roster. But Harrison Smith didn't come back for a 6-win season. He came back to get in the playoffs again, right? And Justin Jefferson didn't sign that deal to be perfectly thrilled with whatever is to come. So there are real expectations for this year to be in the playoffs. Or I think the most likely outcome is probably that they have a Lions 2022 type of year where maybe they don't make the playoffs, but they're right there. They're battling to the end. And maybe you make it, maybe you don't, depending on all the other scenarios. That's where I think that you would have some pretty big confidence in what they're doing. But if it's a really bad year, then you're going to look around and go, I don't know. I don't know if this competitive rebuild thing is going to work, even though I know they have a lot of money to spend in the next offseason.
Like, I think the best case scenario for this team is what the Packers did last year, right? Because they go into last year, they have the youngest roster in the NFL. They're putting Jordan Love at quarterback to replace Aaron Rodgers. He goes, I don't know, they're screwed. They start 2-5. Like, that's the other thing that Viking fans need to have. And I've said this before. There needs to be patience this year. If they start 2-5, don't start trying to fire the coach or declare JJ McCarthy a bust or any of that stuff. Like, you can turn it around as the season goes along. That Lions season you talked about, I think they were like, what, 2-8 when they started? And then they started rattling off all those wins and Dan Campbell's bouncing the Packers out of the playoffs to end the season. Like, if the Vikings can do what the Packers did, or even the Rams, who were the sixth seed last year, and they gave Detroit a pretty good fight in the wild card round. Like, I think that everybody's going to feel really good about the direction of this franchise. And I think, you know, if they do that, there's a good chance that JJ McCarthy is starting under center, don't you think?
Well, yeah, it's hard to figure that out because if Sam Darnold lives up to this idea that it was the coaching and it was the supporting cast, which is very believable when you look at the coaching and the supporting cast. Somebody asked me a mailbag question about the worst coaches, and I just did the worst coaches of the last decade, and two of them coached most of Sam Darnold's career in Adam Gase and Matt Rhule. That's pretty tough to have had that. And also, his second best receiver in Carolina was Terrace Marshall. His best receiver of the Jets was Jamison Crowder. I mean, just like, is that the guy's name? What is his name? Is that
put some respect on Quincy Enunwa? Couldn't even say his name. It doesn't matter what his name is, but yes.
Right. That's my point, is that it is believable. And when you see someone like Nick Mullins come this close to beating Cincinnati and Detroit twice, like, Mullins is right in the driver's seat to win those games. They don't pull them out. Maybe tush push with CJ Ham next time and not with Brandon Powell, but they're that close to winning those games against pretty good teams, or a really good team in Detroit. And I think Sam Darnold is a lot more talented than Nick Mullins is. So you can buy into the concept of him being the true bridge of playing this year if it goes well. But you brought up an interesting part of this, a dynamic to it that I'm very curious to find out how it goes. If Darnold starts, but that schedule kind of punches him in the face at the beginning, then if they're 2-5, that you just aren't going to go forward with the Sam Darnold experience. It probably means that he hasn't played that well if they end up 2-5, and they could end up at that point going over to JJ McCarthy to play teams that are a little easier, and maybe they do reel off some wins. There's so many different iterations of the Sam Darnold experiment. There's the maybe he's Jeff George and he wins a bunch of games and you make the playoffs and stuff, or Case Keenum, where it's a really crazy good year, or it's Donovan McNabb and it just never launches. And, you know, in this case, though, they at least have, well, they might have had, do they have Ponder yet? coming off the bench after they benched McNabb. Maybe they did.
Yeah, because he came in five games afterwards. But I mean, right. that supporting staff was like, I don't know, was Charles Johnson there? I don't think Mike Wallace was there rough. Yet, but like it was. It was not rough. Good.
So that could potentially be it too. But I think that if the best version of this team, as far as actual wins, is probably if Sam Darnold starts the whole season, because JJ McCarthy, that's how I look at it, because McCarthy is in such need of development from what I saw in minicamp. Not to say he's a bust. It just looks to me like he's going to need a lot of time before he's mastered this entire thing. And I think he would even admit to that as well, just how difficult it is to make that transition when he is only 21 and he didn't have Bo Nix or Michael Penix type college experience. So he has longer to go. And if he starts the majority of the year, that probably means it didn't go that well. And if Darnold starts the whole year, it probably means that it went very well for him.
You know, speaking of JJ McCarthy, I think everybody's asking, when is he going to start? But I'll ask you something different, because you've seen him up close. You've seen him throw passes, not with YouTube clips or, you know, top five misfires by JJ McCarthy in OTAs or whatever. But why do you think the Vikings thought JJ McCarthy was the guy to be their quarterback of the future?
Well, one thing is that there was an old clip before the internet went viral with everything, but I think Deadspin was just started to get going, of Tom Brenneman saying, if you spend 5 minutes with Tim Tebow, you're a better person. You have to be old to remember this, but maybe you do. It was this ridiculous comment during a Tim Tebow game in college, where Tom Brenneman declared that if you spent time with Tim Tebow, you'd be a better person for it. And it was one of the funniest things I've ever heard in my life. But if you spend a few minutes with JJ McCarthy, your life is the same, but you will come away extremely impressed. Because you don't expect someone who's 21 years old to have his head screwed onto his body as well as it is for him. Most of us at 21 had no idea what we were doing with our lives, probably quite immature and lost in this universe. Whereas JJ McCarthy, since he was in fifth grade, has understood exactly where the Lord was going to take him. And it was to the NFL in the first round of the NFL draft. And that's where he is. And I think he has the exact right mentality and the obsession with football that you saw from someone like Kirk Cousins, where it's just this dedication to, I'm going to do everything I possibly can under the sun to make this work and to be the best version that I could possibly be. And when you get that sense from someone that is that dedicated to it, and you add it with pure arm strength, of which he has a ton of, mobility and athleticism, which he has a lot of. I wouldn't say that it's on the level of the great running quarterbacks in the league, but playmaking outside the pocket, throwing on the run, things like that, where he really excels. You could see them, you know, comparing those two sides of the physical skill. And he's big too, by the way. Like, he doesn't look huge on TV at Michigan, but in person he's big. So it's not like we're talking about this little quarterback who's going to try hard or whatever. We're talking about a guy who was built with all the tools to be a star quarterback in the NFL, and then with the mentality to battle as hard as he possibly can to master every part of the offense, to be there the earliest, that kind of thing, to grind the film at home, to be going through, as he talked about, going through his dropbacks and all those stuff where he's studying. He's having his, I think, fiance read him the plays, and he has to tell her exactly what happened. And he's putting in all the effort, and you see it. He got better from the time we first saw him at rookie minicamp and OTAs until the end of minicamp. And I thought had a really good practice, his final practice before they hit the summertime. And somebody like that, with all those things going for them, sounds like your franchise type of quarterback. The only concern is he going to be able to straighten out the accuracy well enough? Is he going to be able to play with the timing and pocket presence? Because you never really know from anybody when they get to the NFL. I would say that for every single quarterback. Pocket presence in college, meh, whatever, just exist back there and you'll be fine. In the NFL, everything is timed out and it happens really fast and the dudes are coming to kill you and all that stuff. The defenses are very complicated. The seeing ghost thing is real. That happens. So how quickly can you truly process when you're actually standing back there? All those factors go for any rookie quarterback, but the tools and the things that correlate to success, I think JJ McCarthy has a lot of those things.
One of the things they talked about too during the pre-draft process, and you alluded to it a little bit with Sam Darnold in New York, you know, the infrastructure, right? They have the weapons around them. They have the coaching staff. I believe there was an article over at The Ringer that put the Vikings supporting staff fourth as far as the greatest supporting cast for a rookie quarterback. And number one on the list was 2000, which helped Dante Culpepper take the Vikings to the NFC championship game. You know, which quarterbacks do you think had the better support system? Was it that 2000 team or is it that 2024 team? And does it give it a run for its money or do you think it's overblown? Or what do you think about the support system that JJ McCarthy or Sam Darnold has coming into the season?
Yeah, the overblown part is interesting to me because I think that there are a lot of quarterbacks in the NFL that could blow in the wind one way or the other. So if the wind pushes them into a bad situation, they'll just be bad. And if the wind pushes them into a good situation, they'll be pretty good. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong to say Justin Fields, but he might be that way. Was put into one of the worst situations that you were going to find. Bad offensive line, bad coaching situation. Then they fire the coach and then the next group wants to tank. And then like that doesn't get much worse than that. And he doesn't have any great wide receivers until he's got DJ Moore. I'm not saying he would have been great otherwise, but it's a horrendous situation. And the same thing with Sam Darnold. I guess we're going to find out when the wind blows the other way with Sam Darnold. But if Sam Darnold is drafted by the 2024 Vikings, I don't know how much better he would be, but I am damn sure he would be better than he was with the New York Jets and Adam Gase coaching that team, who Le'Veon Bell was just throttling on Twitter the other day. And I thought, well, yeah, you know, the man has a point. I don't think he's just being a hater, but there is a certain level where it doesn't matter anymore. I mean, I think that Dante's situation was probably a little better than this. It's close. Maybe a little better. Probably Randy Moss versus the average wide receiver is way better than Justin Jefferson because receivers have gotten a lot better and offenses have gotten a lot better at highlighting receivers as opposed to just lining them up outside and having them run deep or whatever. So I think that there was more of an advantage of having Moss then than there is of having Jefferson now. That's not to disparage Jefferson. It's just the gap was maybe wider.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Or the advantage was maybe larger when you had him. But it's pretty similar to come in. And then I think the coaching situation being very stable with Kevin O'Connell and him being a former quarterback. But even, you know, you go back then, it's the ownership is more stable now for sure. The team can spend more money now for sure. So it's pretty darn comparable. I think if JJ McCarthy reaches the baseline of being a good quarterback, then this group will push him forward to being a very good quarterback. If he does not reach that baseline, there's no helping it. It's kind of like with Mullins. There's no making Nick Mullins not throw interceptions. There's no coach. There's no receiver. There's no magic potion. That man, if he plays quarterback, is going to throw a bleep ton of interceptions and there's nothing you can do. So if there's something like that with McCarthy, if he can't figure out how to be accurate, well, then there's not a whole lot that Justin Jefferson can do if it's flying 10 feet over his head. But as hard as the kid works, we have seen quarterbacks, especially young ones, improve that accuracy over the years as they develop. So I think that it is a massive, massive factor. Even when you're drafting someone, the confidence that you have, the way I look at it is every draft pick has its own percentage of success. When we say, well, you know, this percentage of first rounders work out, well, it doesn't work that way because they're all different. So based on his stats, based on his makeup, based on his skills, based on the circumstance, what is his numbers? The coaching and the circumstance push his numbers farther towards success. That doesn't guarantee anything, but maybe it was a 50% chance before, but now it's a 60%. Or maybe it was a 40% and now it's a 50% because of what you have.
And you know what's funny is never trash a potential sponsor, but I was looking on Prize Picks, which now has season-long lines. Did you see what Justin Jefferson's yardage total is for next year?
No, I didn't.
Their over-under is about 13,000 yards. Or 1,300 yards, I should say. Yeah. Not 13,000. Yeah, yeah. That'd be insane.
That'd be crazy, yeah.
But I laugh because I thought about it, and I'm like, okay. Everybody's like, well, with Kirk Cousins was... excuse me, live YouTube. But, you know, just Kirk Cousins was giving Justin Jefferson the ball, and he struggled afterwards. I looked it up. Justin Jefferson still had 100 yards per game without Kirk Cousins, with Nick Mullins chucking interceptions everywhere all over the place. And by the way, they almost won in Cincinnati. They had a shot to win when Detroit was here. And I think in Detroit, too, I mean, the game was close until the third quarter. So, I mean, there are ways to make up for it. I think that it would be in the best interest, though, if you did see that improvement from McCarthy. And it might not be this year. It might be like Dante, where in 2000, he comes in, he takes the field, and he takes charge.
Well, and even with Justin Jefferson, he didn't play that whole game against the Raiders. He barely played in that game. And so when you talk about yards per game, it would have been much higher if hadn't been a bad throw that caused him to almost die. So that it just shows you how unstoppable Justin Jefferson is. And I think historically, number one wide receivers, even with struggling quarterback play, still put up a lot of numbers. I mean, Devontae Adams still caught a lot of passes last year, despite not having Aaron Rodgers. Not quite the same, but Aiden O'Connell still pumped the ball. If anything, bad quarterbacks push the ball to their number one receivers more because they're not trusting reads or anything like that. This is where it all circles back to Darnold, though, because is Darnold going to allow them to develop J.J. McCarthy the way they might need to develop J.J. McCarthy? Because Kevin O'Connell has said, I won't put him out there until he has totally mastered the offense, till he's 100% locked in and out of the huddle, getting the play call in his headset, doing the reads, adjusting the protections, getting on the same page with the wide receivers. And all of that is a lot to master pretty quickly. If Sam Darnold's good, it's going to give J.J. McCarthy plenty of time to work on all that. He could spend every day after practice working with the quarterback's coach on technique as far as throwing. He could spend the week learning how to prepare as an NFL quarterback and so forth and not have that pressure right away if Darnold is pretty good. And you could also see, because of Justin Jefferson and how good he is, that Darnold could be pretty good right away. And that's the ideal scenario. If you get into a spot where Darnold is struggling, we saw them push Jaren Hall in after the 4-interception game by Nick Mullins because Kevin O'Connell was frustrated. It's way easier to say in July, well, yeah, you know, we're going to take it slow and everything else, than it is in October when you've been struggling with that quarterback. And then if McCarthy does get thrown in too quickly, what does that look like? Because I remember with Justin Herbert, there's a lot of Justin Herbert vibes with McCarthy in the way that draft analysts were not all completely sold on him. The accuracy was maybe a question. The offense was a question. And, you know, the guy has really good tools. But Tyrod Taylor started that year, and then a doctor punctured his lung or something.
Yes.
And Justin Herbert just had to go in. And I don't think anybody thought Justin Herbert was really ready for that until he was. And you never really know until the guy gets in. And that's what makes this so difficult to predict and project and everything. I mean, your thought was about Jefferson. That makes it all easier. But in terms of trying to predict what Jefferson's going to do, it probably does matter a difference between Darnold and McCarthy.
Moral of the story as well, don't hire Dr. Nick as your team doctor. It may save a couple bucks on the bottom line, but in the end, you might puncture the lung of your quarterback. We started the show talking about our summer plans. It is June 28th as we record this, which means we're about 1 month away from Vikings training camp. Let me start by asking this. We've already talked about the quarterbacks. What is your most intriguing non-quarterback storyline heading into training camp?
It's obviously the kicker, Will Reichert. He looked excellent in practice. We saw him show off the leg. I'm only sort of kidding because that is actually a major part of the intrigue. When you draft a kicker and he's the all-time leading scorer at Bama, you know, it comes along with something there. And I did a story about him just even since he was in sixth grade, that he's been a kicking prodigy, that he's been way ahead of what you would expect. And then he stayed in college for an extra year to even work on it, to make sure he was 100% ready for the NFL. And now here he is as a draft pick that they're pretty happy about, I think, and ready to solidify that position that's just been all over the place in Vikings history. I don't need to go through that. So actually the kicking competition does have some intrigue to it. Only with this fan base would I say left guard. I don't know how many other, maybe everybody's obsessed, but this fan base in particular has been so beaten down by these guard positions that Blake Brandel becomes an interesting story. It's probably, if you're talking about really, it's probably the wide receiver competition behind Addison and behind Jefferson, because Hockenson is unlikely to play right away. It might even be 6 weeks. He might have to come back after the bye. The injury and the timing of the surgery really put him back. So who's the wide receiver three, and does anybody emerge? And is there any Mankato receiver in the house that can develop into, you know, the next good wide receiver from out of nowhere? You got a bunch of guys. You got like Lucky Jackson and Malik Knowles and, you know, all these players. Deshaun Jones caught my eye a bunch of times during training camp. Kevin O'Connell didn't sound super thrilled about that group when I asked him. The Jalen Naylor mystery. Jalen Naylor is either going to be a really good receiver or someone we talk about for ages of why didn't that happen? They always brought up Jalen Naylor, but it just never came to fruition. So we're really going to see there. And then Dallas Turner on the defensive side. Where does he fit in? Where is he playing? What are the early returns? You can see the flexibility, the explosiveness, the coordination of this guy, and the intelligence when you talk to him. The other players seem very impressed. It's mini camp. Once the pads come on, are we noticing him on a daily basis? And I'll throw out one more for you. How about anyone from the 2022 draft class? Anyone, just someone, be something. So far from Ed Ingram, you know, we're not going to be able to tell by the end of camp if he's going to take a big step. If he loses the job to Dalton Reisner, we'll know it's a problem. But on the defensive side, your first couple of draft picks there on the defensive side, Lewis Cine, I've got him right now not making the roster. Andrew Booth Jr. might be tough for him to make the roster. When I was doing my 53, because he just hasn't seemed like a fit with Brian Flores. Brian Asamoah the same way. It's pretty clear from bringing in Blake Cashman that that's not their option. Anybody else? Jaqueline Roy? Anybody? Was he? No, or was he 2023?
Was he 2023. Yes.
Okay. So, but even 2023, Addison, anybody else, right? So that maybe wasn't a UDFA, can step up. And that defensive tackle position also interesting with Levi Drake Rodriguez there, the seventh round pick, Jaqueline Roy coming back after being banged up last year. So all over the field, there's intrigue outside of quarterback.
Levi Drake Rodriguez, best nickname out of this draft class, though, Prospect X. That's Kalen Kaler with that nickname yes. there. You know, you talked a little bit about the wide receiver three position. I actually wrote an article at Zone Coverage this morning. I know you're a big South Park guy, so you probably remember the member berries, right? I feel like when Vikings fans think about the wide receiver three position, it's like they're eating a bunch of member berries. You know what I mean? Like, oh, remember Jake Reed? Oh, I love Jake Reed. Oh, remember Jarius Wright? Jarius Wright. Yeah. And then even like, you know, trying to find solutions, they're looking at Michael Thomas, who like won their fantasy league a couple years ago, or Hunter Renfrow, and they picked him up when he had 100 catches or whatever. It brings me to this. I'm interested in this running game. I'm interested to see Aaron Jones, my wrestling buddy from the Royal Rumble. He was actually down in Tampa, and my friend got a picture with him. Because at the time, he was with the Green Bay Packers, but like I was like, oh, cool, it's Aaron Jones. And then 3 months later, he was a Viking. I'm like, damn it, I should have went and said hello or something now. But outside of my wrestling forays, you know, Aaron Jones, very capable receiver out of the backfield. You have Jefferson, you have Jordan Addison. Eventually Hockenson comes back. I mean, outside of the first six games or until Hockenson's up to speed, like I look at Brandon Powell and I go, okay, maybe he's not going to be, you know, Victor Cruz the year they won the Super Bowl, right? He worked out of the slot and got all of those catches. Kevin O'Connell uses that third receiver spot to do the dirty work, to clear out routes so the rest of the top weapons can do damage. So I think what I'm getting at is the addition of Aaron Jones is big. And another guy from that 2022 class, Ty Chandler, how does he improve? Does, you know, why wasn't he on the field? Is it a pass protection issue? Is it a ball security issue? I think those things have to be discovered. And again, they might not be things that we know at the end of training camp, but they're things we're going to find out very quickly when it comes to the start of the season.
Yeah, quick point on the wide receiver thing is that since the available free agents list is easily Googleable, people love to look at the names and say, we should have that one. But there's a reason they're here. I mean, there's just not very many examples of guys who were picked up in early July at the beginning of training camp that are going to be difference makers. I mean, didn't folks try to talk themselves into Josh Doctson maybe potentially being a difference maker, or Michael Floyd, or a number of other guys who have come in? Tajay Sharpe, Kendall Wright, Jordan Taylor, Tavares King.
Didn't Kirk Cousins give like the most lukewarm endorsement of Josh Doctson? They're like, hey, you played with him before. And he's like, yeah, he's a guy. He's a receiver. We could use him, but.
I remember a press conference that was largely dedicated with Cousins to Josh Doctson. I do not remember the commentary exactly, but certainly that signing's biggest moment was the press conference, because it never turned into anything. So there's a reason why teams aren't bringing in Hunter Renfrow. He was of receivers who were targeted at least, I think it was maybe 50 times last year, he was the lowest graded by PFF. Like, whatever happened last year, it's just not there with Hunter Renfrow anymore, and nobody else seems to think so. Michael Thomas, I think you're asking for problems there, right? Doesn't this guy tweet about his quarterbacks if he doesn't like how it's going? That's not really what they're looking for here. You've got a better chance to throw a bunch of randoms into a room and have them run a bunch of routes and get someone better than a washed-up free agent that's very unlikely to work for you. And wide receivers are so sought after right now in the league, probably the second most valuable position. I mean, if somebody's good, a team will sign them. I promise you. Sterling Shepard got signed. I mean, that guy has been broken for a while and someone's still trying it. Julio Jones, who did he play for last year? Like Philly or somebody?
Yeah.
I mean,
if he didn't sign till November.
Yeah. If you can catch a ball, you're going to get interest from the NFL. On the running game though, Aaron Jones, if he's healthy, and last year after he came back from some injuries, he was spectacular. If he's healthy for 14 games, it should be a completely different scenario than we've seen over the last 2 years, because he is a good pass protector. He's a great receiver out of the backfield. He's probably, other than Christian McCaffrey, one of the best at receiving out of the backfield in the entire NFL. He brings a leadership element to your offense that if Sam Darnold needs anything, anytime, or JJ McCarthy, this is a go-to guy. This is somebody who takes the leadership weight off of the shoulders of whatever quarterback we're talking about, because he is the guy. That's another person that as soon as you meet him, you spend a few minutes talking to him, you get it. Like, you get why everyone raves about Aaron Jones all the time. Just has the right mentality. He wants to make everyone around him better. And then, by the way, he averages 5 yards a carry for his career. And last year, that wasn't a huge drop off from that, especially in the playoffs. If he's banged up and it's not the same guy, it's going to be tough again. But if he's healthy and it is close to the same guy, then we should see a huge improvement. The only thing I wonder about is, will Kevin O'Connell commit to the run game? And if he doesn't, I don't think it's a tragedy, because passing is going to win for you regardless, but it needs to be better. They've been one of the worst running teams in the league over the last 2 years. Certainly some of that was Alexander Mattison being in over his head. I haven't felt that they've had a real identity. Maybe Aaron Jones helps them form one. I haven't felt like they've had a cheat code or a go-to play like the Gary Kubiak outside zone, where they just mastered that thing. And in 2019 and 2020, they knew exactly step for step how to block for that, how to run behind that. And it seemed over the last 2 years, it's sort of throwing a lot of stuff at the wall. You know, well, this week we're going to run this kind of thing. And next week, well, maybe we'll try something different. They've just never found what really works for them. And the play calling with Kevin O'Connell, he's never really found where running is supposed to fit in. It's just like pass. Oh, you know, I haven't run in a while. Maybe I should just run. And then you get 3 yards and then you pass again. And so, I get that when you're not having a lot of success with it, it's hard to stick with it and it's hard to form the identity. All those things are harder when you're running back. And, is the blocking going to be better if Blake Brandel's in there blocking instead of Dalton Risner? Maybe it's a thing where there are so many variables that go into it that it's hard to just say running back equals good in the same way that we could do with quarterback. If the quarterback's good, then his performance will be good. The running back is dependent on a lot of different things, but I think Jones makes those dependent variables less impactful than, say, with someone like Alexander Mattison or Ty Chandler.
So we're very early, still got about 2 months till the start of the regular season. But as they get ready for training camp, where they're in, I don't know, Galveston or Cancun or wherever, just getting their last rest in before the season, where do you think the Vikings stand in the NFC today on June 28th?
I think that they are a fringe playoff. And it reminds me a little bit of maybe like Pittsburgh-ish, where you look at Pittsburgh every year and you go, there's a lot there. There's a lot of good players. Are they good enough to win the Super Bowl? No, I don't think so. But if you have good coaching, and I think especially on the defensive side, we can definitively say they have great coaching on the defensive side. And on the offensive side, we can definitively say that Kevin O'Connell knows how to get the ball to Justin Jefferson. And I also think that we can definitively say he really knows how to work with quarterbacks. I throw Josh Dobbs out of this entirely. It's just that's who Josh Dobbs is. He's a journeyman backup quarterback who's been with 11 different teams and doesn't really win when he gets a chance to start. And that's who he is, right? But, you saw in the Nick Mullins, when even someone can operate the offense and throw to the right places, the success that they can have. You saw the confidence that was built with Kirk Cousins and Kevin O'Connell. And when they really got into lockstep at one point playing San Francisco and Green Bay, what that looked like. If you could get to a point there with Sam Darnold or JJ McCarthy, whoever's playing, then you can compete to be in the playoffs. I don't think that they're ready, because if you lose one player at a lot of positions, if you lose one corner, if you lose a safety, if you lose an edge rusher, a defensive tackle, especially, where are you at? That's where they need to spend more in free agency next year. And ultimately those things will happen. DJ Wonnum gets hurt last year and he's a guy, but he gets hurt last year. It was devastating. Or Byron Murphy Jr. gets hurt and it's devastating, because they just need more players. They need more guys to develop. They need more guys from free agency in order to be a legitimate contender. But when I picked the schedule, I went 9-8. It's not bold. It seems like probably the safest pick, though it is over the, I think it's 6.5, what most sports books have them. I definitely have them winning more games than that, but I don't think that they're there as far as being up there with Detroit. I mean, I saw this thing people are getting all mad about, where the 33rd team picked the best player at every position in the NFC North, and it was just all Detroit players. And, it's not that far from the truth. I might go Christian Darrisaw over Taylor Decker. And of course, Jefferson's on the team. But other than that, though, it's a lot of Detroit Lions. And so there, you have to go another offseason or another 2 years probably of developing players, finding free agents and key players to be at the level of Detroit's roster right now. That's what you're chasing. So that's out in the future. I think this year it's not quite there yet.
It's almost like a simulation for Vikings fans, right? Like we have to chase Detroit. How is Detroit? Well, like you said, you got Amon-Ra St. Brown, you got Aiden Hutchinson, you got Penei Sewell. You have their offensive coordinator,
Ben Johnson. They added Kevin Zeitler, which is an upgrade, even though they had a good offensive line last year.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people are kind of crapping on the Lions, thinking they're going to go down the toilet. I could see them being at the top of the NFC North again. I could see the Packers hanging around there. Hell, I could see the Bears hanging. I mean, the division's going to be really interesting. I think it's going to produce one of the most fun seasons for the Vikings. Like, I wrote this at the beginning of the season. The Vikings need to make this team fun again. And I think they do. I think going into the season, there's a lot of curiosity. There's a lot of excitement. And I think fans are going to have, I don't want to say an enjoyable experience, because that goes out the window when they're in another one possession game in the fourth quarter and in September. But I'm really looking forward to the season and seeing how things fall into place.
I agree. I think that this year goes under when I was thinking about this the other day, because I had a guest on my show, Covers Detroit, and we were talking about how expectations shape the feelings of a fan base, where Detroit last year, everything was a surprise and it was very exciting. Wow. Okay. They're going to be this good, huh? This is crazy. They want to get, there's a lot of firsts. You know, you won the first playoff game since however long, first trip to the NFC Championship since however long. And now it's miserable because you have to win or it sucks. And yeah. Like, that's so much different than where the Vikings are. Where the Vikings are, if you win 9 games, you go, okay, well, wow, then that means people did their jobs. That means people emerged. It means that there were surprise performances you didn't expect, that the quarterbacks probably played pretty good, and you're going to feel good about the future. And then in 2025, if they go 9-8 again, it's going to feel like you're disappointed. You know, isn't that crazy? Like Jacksonville, for example, didn't they have the same record the last 2 years or something just like that?
Yeah.
1 year they make the playoffs and they get that comeback win. Everyone feels great about Jacksonville. The next year they have either a similar or the exact same record and they miss the playoffs just because that's how the cookie crumbled. And now it's, well, it's a hot seat. Trevor Lawrence stinks. You know, Doug Peterson, can he? It's crazy how much these things change. So I would say to people, embrace a year where it feels less pressure like it did under all the Kirk Cousins season. All the Kirk Cousins seasons, every loss is a travesty because you were here to come win the Super Bowl with a team that went to the NFC Championship. So every time you lose, every disappointment, what are you here for if not for that? Why did they pay you if not for that? Everything funneled back to that one decision. And we're talking losses 6 years later. It just every, you know, they lose the game in Kansas City was to go to 1-4 or something, right? Against Kansas City here. I think whatever game it was to go 1-4, it's the same sort of, why did they bring you back if this was what was going to happen? This year, you don't really have that. And if Sam Darnold or JJ McCarthy, if they're good, if they're fun, then you could enjoy that rather than feeling like if you lose, every single game is a referendum on one person's contract and a decision that they made 6 years ago, right? And so that like weight has come off the shoulders of Vikings.
And now Vikings fans can, you know, it's like the sickos meme, right? Where the guy's looking through the window and he's just like laughing hot. Like it's Vikings fans watching the Falcons go through the same thing that they've gone through the last 6 years. Just like trying to tell you, trying to warn you, you know, just didn't listen. What's going on at Purple Insider, Matthew? You got a lot going on. I talked about your book a little bit. What's all going on with your Vikings coverage right now?
Well, this week has been actually really fun. It's been random questions week. So I got a ton of fan questions that are totally off the wall and strange. Well, we talked about those, about the 11 fullback team. So people can go check out those episodes. Those have been pretty fun. I did that with the Lions reporter, just asked them totally random Lions questions. Like what if Matthew Stafford had not been traded? Where would they be right now? So things like that. And the How I Met Your Mother piece, I think a lot of people would really enjoy because the episode called Little Minnesota that has now been memed a million times, gift, whatever you want to call it, a million times. I found the writer and found the origin of his Vikings fandom that led to him writing that episode. So that was a really fun story. I got another one coming next week that I think is going to be pretty cool as well about one of the draft picks for the Vikings. So a lot going on. I'm using my time where I don't have to travel out to TCO Performance Center to sit at home and think of totally weird stuff that I can write about.
1999 NFC Championship game. Damn.
That's damn. The one.
Where can people follow you on social media, Matthew?
You know, at Matthew Collar, they can follow the Purple Insider account. Twitter is usually where I exist. You know, I just didn't think TikTok was going to be a thing. And then it became such a big thing and I just never got on it. So sorry, everybody who's only on TikTok, but that's the main place. Purpleinsider.com has everything. The YouTube, we're growing on the YouTube. So I say we, as if there's more people, it's really just me. So anyway, you know, whatever. Type in Purple Insider somewhere. I'll probably come up.
Well, thanks for coming on, Matthew. Once again, go get his book, Football is a Numbers Game, The Inside Story of PFF. I'm reading it right now. It's a great read. Get it wherever books are sold. But that's all the time we have for the Viking Age podcast today. We do this every Monday with a late week episode right here on the Viking Age YouTube channel. And we're in podcast form on Apple and Spotify the very next day. However you consume us, make sure you rate, comment, like, and subscribe so you never miss a new episode and we can spread the word to the masses. For Matthew Collar, I am Chris Shad. This has been the Purple Insider, or excuse me, the Viking Age podcast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Get an 11% rebate at Menards. Rust-Oleum Stops Rust custom 5-in-1 spray paint lets you choose from 5 spray patterns with a twist of the dial. It protects indoor and outdoor metal and wood projects for long-lasting results and is available in more than 40 colors. Get started on your painting project at Menards, number one in customer satisfaction among home improvement retailers according to J.D. Power. For more information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Save big.